T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Overnight America continues. Now past midnight. Officially the start of your week. I guess it's the start of your week. Yuck. That's about all I can say. Well, actually, this could be a pretty good week for me. I'm looking forward to it. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Record. If you miss any part of the show, you can download it on the podcast page at KMOX.com/overnight. Find it on your favorite podcast app. And when you do, just click that subscribe button. Do it. Couple of food stories, and we're going to join Johnny Rabbit coming up with a presentation at the History Museum. Some of those secrets. Shh, quiet. The secrets of St. Louis. Man, he's got a couple of them, but you're going to have to go to the show to hear about them, but he's got some pretty good ones you can share with us. No secret handshakes. You know, spoiler alert. How come there's no secret handshakes for us to learn? But I don't understand the appeal of everyone turning things green. You have the Shamrock Shake, sure, I get it. You know, McDonald's has been doing that forever. Did they even do it this year? People normally go crazy for it. I haven't seen anyone talking about it. You know who decided to get in on it was Skyline Chili. And they decided to do St. Patrick's Day the green way, which they dye their spaghetti noodles green. I've had Skyline Chili. It's okay. Some people go absolutely crazy for it. Here's the thing. I wouldn't go out of my way for Skyline Chili. It's not like when I go into a city that has Skyline, I say, oh, I got to stop there and get it right away. There was a time where I lived nowhere near a White Castle. And if I went into a place that had a White Castle, you better believe I stopped and got White Castle. I loved it. And the same could be said with a lot of the other different chains that you just enjoy. There's no Hungry Howie's pizza here in St. Louis, Missouri. I love Hungry Howie's. So anytime I go somewhere, like back home to visit my parents, I got to get Hungry Howie's pizza. I do that. Never had that sort of craving. But when I see green spaghetti noodles with chili and cheese on top, I think to myself, who would order that monstrosity? It's the green way was available today at Skyline Chili. And it didn't really change the flavor of it. It was just changing the look of it, but still, that's not enough for me to find out for myself. Why would anyone do that? Why does anyone like to dye anything a different color, green like that? Well, it's just going to be great. We're going to make it green. No, it doesn't make it any more appealing. It doesn't make it any more festive. And you know what? No one actually really enjoys it. They're just humoring you. If they say they enjoy it, they're not telling you the truth. Maybe you like to turn everything green. Do you have just dye in your kitchen? Oh, let's just make these eggs green for green eggs and ham or something like that. No thanks. I know Dr. Seuss would not be proud of me right now. You know, you should try it. Green eggs and ham. You may like it, Sam. I am. I don't know all the words to it, but it's something like that. There was another story on the Telegraph. It said, the latest research is out. Eggs are now again bad for you. Why can they not figure that? Of all the scientific discoveries we had in my lifetime, how can they not agree on eggs? It's bad, good, bad, good. And I don't want to do a stupid stand-up comedian routine because that's been done and mocked long before I even started in radio. But seriously, of all the things that they've researched in my life, how can they not figure out the stupid egg deal? I saw a report that they found a frozen woolly mammoth and they rejuvenated and it made the cells alive again. And yeah, they're revitalizing frozen woolly mammoth cells, but they can't figure out if eggs are good or bad or agree on that sort of thing. The latest U.S. research, and this is according to the Telegraph, on eggs won't go over easy for those that can't go without them. Study participants who ate about 1.5 eggs daily had a slightly higher risk of heart disease than those who ate no eggs. The study showed that more eggs, the greater the risk. The chances of dying early were also elevated. I don't eat eggs every day, but I love eggs. Love them. Over medium with some buttered white toast is one of the best combinations you can have. I love dunking toast into egg yolk. Oh, can't get enough. My kid loves it too. Anytime I make it for myself, he says, you know, make him one. I might have that once a week. And when I do, I enjoy every second of it. My kid might have a couple eggs a week too, you know, scrambled eggs or cheese omelet or something like that. He does enjoy a nice egg. But what about Rocky Balboa, man? He's living strong. Look how good he looks. He was eating raw eggs. That's Sylvester Stallone, raw eggs. Look at him. I think anyone would be happy to look that good at his age. So the participants who ate about 1.5 eggs daily had a slightly higher risk. Studies showed that the more eggs, the greater the risk. The culprit is the cholesterol in the egg yolks. Dietary guidelines that ease limits on cholesterol have helped eggs make a comeback in U.S. diets. The new study has limitations, whatever. They always change the goalposts on these sort of studies, don't they? Oh, now it's not okay. Here's the new guidelines. Now it is. Now it isn't. You ever go to a restaurant and the person says, no, I'll just take egg yolks, and they look at them and they say, what are you talking about? No one ever says just egg yolks or just egg whites, something like that. I should say egg whites. I don't think anyone says just yolks. Fry me up a yolk. That'd be weird. Yeah, the egg whites. I've been to places. The places I eat don't offer that sort of thing. I go to the cheap, greasy, buttery, fast places. I don't think you can hop over to a McDonald's and say, I'll just take the whites, please, without them saying, can we do that? They have to yell in the back because no one's ever asked them before. Can we do that? Oh, one other thing. You see what Sonic is going to be offering? I love food stories. I love food stories so much. They got this thing starting April 1st, and apparently it's no joke. It's not an April Fool's Day thing, so 2 weeks from today. Sonic is adding an ice cream sandwich with the two ends of it being giant Oreos. Oh, does that sound good? So the Oreo Real Ice Cream Cookie Sandwich comes in a few weeks. The new treat is made of two huge Oreos and vanilla ice cream in between. But if that wasn't good enough, they also have what's going to be soon, the same thing except between Nestle chocolate chip cookies. So you can get two Nestle cookies with ice cream in the middle. Man, I went to a Sonic this weekend. It's been forever since I ate at a Sonic. Kid loved the ice cream. My wife had to tell me, like, hey, I forgot how good their ice cream is here. Yeah, but I got, what did I get, chicken wings or something like that? If this was there, you better believe I would have got an ice cream sandwich. Oh, you better believe it. So they'll be offering these two things starting on April 1st. You might as well get two of each. I don't know how small these things are. They make it look like it's an oversized Oreo. So it's bigger than a regular size Oreo with ice cream in the middle. But then again, the cookie, if they're only the size of like a regular cookie, maybe it's just a little bit larger than a regular Oreo. Man, you got me all excited. Way to go. This is from the Delish, that blog. Man, they post all kinds of great food stories. I'm glad. If it wasn't for website blogs, I'd be missing out on all the novelty foods that some of these fast food places put out. Can't get enough of these novelty foods. Man, it draws me in. I'm a sucker for that sort of thing. If I find out anyone's doing a novelty style food, I'm there and I'm ready to order it because they always sound so good. All right, coming up next, what about some of the, besides secret menu items on the fast food restaurant, how about actual St. Louis secrets? A new presentation is coming up at the History Museum Wednesday morning. We're going to talk to Johnny Rabbit about that next on Overnight America KMOX. Another presentation planned this week at the Missouri History Museum. These are absolutely fabulous. Joining us now is Johnny Rabbit. Thanks for coming back on.
Fabulous. Thank you.
They're
fabulous.
Wonderful.
I hope so. I hope it's going to be fabulous. I hope.
Oh, they're always so wonderful. You get to learn so much about St. Louis, and there's different aspects you never really thought of. And it's funny, you'll bring up these topics and I'll think, you know, I never really thought of that, but now I really want to know about it.
Right. There are so many different facets. Facets to our city, our wonderful city. This would really be a big program. It would be in the Lee Auditorium, lower level of the Missouri History Museum, 5700 Lindell, footed of Oliver. Free parking either side or on Lindell. Are there lots next to the tennis courts? Come on in, but get there it's a little earlier than usual. The doors will open to the Lee Auditorium at 10. And jazz pianist Dave Venn, who is the best jazz pianist, or pianist, as far as I'm concerned, in St. Louis. Many people will agree with that. He's been performing for decades in St. Louis, the Playboy Club, Gaslight Square. He actually performed in every public room in the Chase Park Plaza Hotel through the years of the hotel and still plays there on occasion. Mm-hmm. So he's going to honor us with a half hour of music before we get into the presentation. And one of the reasons he's there is simply that Jeannie Venn, his wife, is the chief concierge at the Chase Park Plaza, which is going to be one of our subjects. He said, hey, I have to drive Jeannie to the place anyway. Why don't I just play the piano for a half hour? I couldn't turn that down. And when the whole show is about untold stories and secrets of St. Louis. And there are so many. We'll get to as many as we possibly can. We're going to start off with Tim O'Neill. Now, Tim is going to be talking about a Prohibition-era story that has to do with the Jack Daniel's distillery that was in St. Louis. It was ousted from Tennessee when Tennessee went dry before the whole country did. And he'll have a couple other stories. Some of them are in his book called Mobs, Mayhem, and Murder. Tim O'Neill, a great reporter and historian for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for many years. He's got a really, really unusual story that I doubt that probably 5% of the people there maybe have heard about this story. Mm. And that's what I'm trying to do, is find people who have stories that will be different. After that, we're going to talk with Chris Knopfziger, and he's going to have stories about odd houses, almost some hidden houses in places where people lived over the years in St. Louis. Mm. And he digs out secrets of the past. He's a historian. He is a writer, an educator. He has a website called St. Louis Patina. He has a weekly blog at STL Mag, stlouismagazine.com. And he's got a couple of secrets of Anheuser-Busch history that have never been talked about before.
Okay, interesting. You know, that there's a lot of history there, of course.
Oh, my
gosh. So there's a lot you can dig up if you're someone that enjoys doing that.
Sure. Yeah. It is there. It's hard to find sometimes. It's not an easy task. Mm-hmm. But we have fortunately, the archives of various organizations, like the History Museum and the Mercantile Library, that have saved these things, just sort of waiting there for people who want to look this stuff, historians, writers, just nosy people. Jeannie Venn, I mentioned, she's going to have stories and secrets of the Chase Park Plaza Hotel. Mm-hmm. She does tours of the hotel, which have been phenomenally successful. I mean, they sell out weeks in advance.
Wow.
And it has never been done before. Now they're doing it. I don't know how long they'll continue with it. Now, this will not be a tour that she gives at the hotel, but will be some of the things that people ask about. The number one question, where are the ghosts? And who are the ghosts? Who are these ghosts? Well, there are a lot of ghosts there. There are more ghosts at the Chase Park Plaza than any other building in St. Louis.
Ooh,
for sure.
That's a big claim right there.
It really is. And all the celebrities that have stayed there. But that's the next thing people know. Okay, what did Sammy Davis Jr. like to do or drink or eat or stay?
Oh, wow. Do they have documents of that?
Oh, sure.
Oh, wow. They keep that. Gosh. Well, of course, word of mouth, too. I'm sure when you have someone high profile that comes in, people hear about all the little things of what they ordered or whatever it is.
Right, right. Yeah. What they would want. Yeah, Red Skelton. For example, every time he stayed there, he only wanted a single guest room, but with two beds, one for himself, one for his steamer trunk, where he carried everything with him, as he always did when he started out in show business.
He kept a bed for his trunk?
For his trunk, yeah.
Oh, okay, not bad, I guess. That's probably...
and so there are many other stories with the Chase Park Plaza. We're also going to have John Gunther, who is a great architect of St. Louis. He's got some stories about places, and some background on the Principia School, some of the history of where it was, how it moved, why it moved, why it was here, and it's been all over the greater St. Louis area, and he's got some good photographs. And all these people will have photographs, too. I don't know if we're going to have any actual photographs of ghosts, but who knows. John will have that. He's going to have some interesting pictures of where the St. Louis Symphony was going to move. Hmm. When they decided to move out of Kiel Opera House, and everybody said, well, they moved to the St. Louis Theater, which is now Paul Hall. But that wasn't the first choice. It was another choice, and it was not in Grand Center. It was not downtown, but was in the city of St. Louis. So he's got pictures about how that would have looked, and would have been a great location, I think, as well. Mm-hmm. So he's got other things as well about just other oddities. For example, many people say, is there a geodesic dome in St. Louis? Of course, Buckminster Fuller's Dome, a climatron at Shaw's Garden, but there are other domes within the St. Louis area that you can see that Fuller had designed. So those are just just a few of the things we're going to be talking about. I know that I'm positive that as far as a kind of a hidden place where people live, the three-story penthouse of the Continental Building at 3615 and Olive, at, just off of Grand, right next to the Fox Theater, that tall building. And Edmund and Drusilla Mays, they built the place. They lived upstairs in this absolutely luxurious, unusual apartment. And there's a little tower on top of that. And the tower was, I better not tell people what it is. That's a secret. I better keep that
find out.
That's why is that tower there?
One of the secrets that you have to see for yourself. You said this week it's on a Wednesday?
Yes, Wednesday.
Wednesday morning.
Yeah, that's, this
Wednesday morning. You got to keep something secret.
I know, but don't keep that secret, though. We got to let people know.
That one they need to know.
Oh, my gosh. So 10 o'clock, doors open. The music from Dave Venn till 10:30. The program goes on. And then at the end of the program, where the last featured performer, so to speak, will be Ronald Martin, who's written a book called The Murders at Pope's Cafeteria.
Wow.
This was a big story in St. Louis. Brutal, brutal murders. And a lot of people have forgotten about it, but it hasn't been that long ago, 1979. But the guy who perpetrated this also did many other murders. He was a serial killer from St. Louis. There's a restaurant in Sarah. It was called Pacini's Cafe. It's now the Scottish Arms at Sarah and Laclede. Murders there. And an interesting thing of this is modus operandi, which always scares me when people tell the whole story about stuff, because somebody might get the idea to follow what this, this guy did it this way. Maybe this is a good thing. Problem was, the way he did it, the people knew who he was, so he murdered them all.
Whoa. So, now that's a story and a half there.
That's crazy.
Well, there's a lot of secrets that go around. Did you uncover any secret handshakes during the research?
No handshakes that I know of. There are plenty of secret handshakes, though.
Yeah, any secret societies?
Well, we didn't really talk about secret societies and stuff. I don't think I better get into secret societies. They do exist.
What about code words that you have to knock on a door and give the code word to get in? Any of those?
Oh, yeah. No, we didn't give away any code words, but there were in the Prohibition days. That really was a real deal.
Oh, sure.
You didn't just walk in a place because it was all illegal hooch, so you had to know somebody, or Joe sent me, or, gosh, there used to be a place, it was Chez Joie. Most people call it Chez Joie. It was on Lindell. In an old mansion, and they made it look like a speakeasy.
Yeah.
And they had a regular cocktail lounge in the front, piano player, just a normal place. But what you wanted to go into the more boisterous area where it was louder music and so on, you'd go to a phone inside an old-time phone booth, pick up the phone, dial the number, and you'd have to say whatever it was, the code word that you'd have to say at the time. And then the back door of the phone booth would open, and you could go into the speakeasy part, even though it wasn't really a speakeasy.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I was at one place like that in Milwaukee, had a deal like that called a safe house, where they would kind of, do something similar. But that's how you exited the building. You had to put like a quarter in, and then you had to dial a number, and, then you'd be able to exit out or whatever that way. I love places like that. That is so neat.
Yeah.
So people want to come out on Wednesday morning. You said doors open at 10 a.m. Get there early because of the live music's just going to be wonderful.
Yes,
presentation starts at 10:30. You don't need a code word to get in this one.
No, no, no. And you don't need any money.
Yeah, it's free.
Absolutely free.
Yeah, that's really great. I love seeing the reaction of people that are able to learn something new. I always walk away from one of these knowing a little bit more, and I feel so well educated on the city by the time I leave. I feel like I know everything when I leave there. And
well, you do.
Yeah, and I'll tell my wife, oh, did you know this and that? And I feel like I know so much more when it comes to the inner workings of what goes on in the city. So I love these presentations. It's this Wednesday morning at the Lee History Museum, the Missouri History Museum in the Lee Auditorium. 10 o'clock, 10:30 is when the actual presentation starts. Johnny Rabbit, thank you so much for joining us here on Overnight America.
You are most welcome. Thank you, Ryan.
And he joins us on the GL International Realty guest line. A couple of St. Patrick's Day things that are out there. Do you see the GOP put an ad out about Beto O'Rourke? This is kind of interesting. Is it really outrageous, though? Is it so totally outrageous you should be upset? And Reuters uncovered something about Beto O'Rourke in his teenage years and decided to not report it until now, of course, when everything's all said and done. Is it the right move, the wrong move? That's coming up. Overnight America, KMOX. Overnight America, we continue through these late night hours, connecting you border to border. You know, there was a story about Beto O'Rourke over in Texas, and the GOP tweeted something out. And let me read it to you. It says, on this St. Patrick's Day, a special message from noted Irishman Robert Francis O'Rourke. And it shows a picture of him with his mugshot when he was arrested for DWI, I believe. And it shows, it says, please drink responsibly underneath it. And they Photoshop a little cartoon top hat with the four-leaf clover, three-leaf clover or something in there. So here's the story. The Republican Party being accused of peddling anti-Irish stereotypes by posting Beto O'Rourke's mugshot from a drunk driving arrest 20 years ago on their social media accounts with the caption, you know, on this St. Patrick's Day, a special message from the noted Irishman Robert Francis O'Rourke. Photo got a lot of people upset. So it's from 1998. He was arrested while driving while intoxicated in Texas. I think he blew a, because I was curious what that entailed. So when, here's basically what happened. When he was 26 years old, O'Rourke was driving drunk along an interstate roadway at a high rate of speed, 75 miles an hour, and just before 3 a.m. Apparently, when police arrived, he failed a breathalyzer test. His blood alcohol level was measured at 0.136. That's way over the legal limit in Texas. So he gets in trouble for that. He's called it dumb. You know, he said it was a big mistake. He's owned up to it, at least in the sense. But there is a... they're also saying he fled the scene. He says he doesn't... he said he didn't flee the scene, but they said he tried to flee the scene, at least. So the tweet angered a lot of people on social media. They said the GOP is promoting racist stereotypes about being Irish, which is interesting, like the people that may be upset with that. Like, look, I got the monitors up right now. Meet the Press. Beto O'Rourke. Can't stop talking about him. Last week when we were watching coverage from New Zealand, I was looking at their bottom scroll, their international news. They talked about Beto O'Rourke getting into the race. And look at this. Meet the Press sends Chuck Todd out to one of his rallies. There's not a lot of people out there. So you have him doing a rally and they send Chuck Todd to cover it. Are you kidding me? They're super excited. They're pushing him as much as they possibly can. They see this guy as their savior. So the GOP puts something out there. Is it really? Do you see that as a racist stereotype? You see that as anti-Irish, the way that they posted this up? It might be in bad taste. I don't see it as anti-Irish by any means. 314-436-7900 is the number. You can call or text that line, or 800-925-1120. The reason I say that is, I mean, every photo I saw online for St. Patrick's Day, okay? This is the dual nature of a day like this. Are you saying there's no connection between celebrating St. Patrick's Day and people drinking? Are you saying there's absolutely zero connection between the two? I don't see it as a racist stereotype by any means. I just see that maybe in poor taste, but no. Not anti-Irish. So a lot of people pretty upset with that tweet. You know, and people go on there. And, you know, let's forget, too, what happened during the whole Brett Kavanaugh thing. I mean, when Brett Kavanaugh was being accused of a crime, they hammered him on this alcohol thing over and over and over and over and over again. I mean, that's all the Democrats did during that whole hearing. They focused on his high school drinking or whatever it was, and drinking games and going to parties and drinking or whatever it is. That's all. I mean, over and over, they said he was disqualified. He should disqualify himself from being a Supreme Court justice for high school parties and college parties that he attended. And keep in mind, he wasn't really convicted of any crime. He was accused by some people, which people are still questioning, and nothing ever came from it. He became a Supreme Court justice, but he took his hits, and man, did they slander him like I haven't seen in decades, since the early 90s, when it comes to someone running for a Supreme Court justice seat. So now that O'Rourke is running for president, of course he's going to have to talk about his DWI when he was 26 years old. They also found out he was part of a hacking group called the Dead Cow, Cult of the Dead Cow. What a terrible name for a hacker group. I guess if you're a hacker, you got to come up with something catchy. That might have been cool in the 90s or whatever. It hasn't really held up. Is there still a group called the Dead Cows or whatever? I guess there is. They talked to some of the former members. I have another story coming up from Reuters, how they had to uncover his teenage hacking days and how they sat on a story during an election and decided not to publish this information. It's a whole different deal, but, you know, part of this whole hacking group is kind of weird to begin with because of the things he said during that time. I will say teenagers have a terrible sense of humor. They always, you know, a lot of the teenagers, and, you know, even when I was a teenager, you don't necessarily have that same filter you do as an adult. There's some things that are funny because they're offensive, and then there's some things you think are funny because they are offensive, but then other teenagers get on top of it, and you feel like, oh, okay, whatever. But then you go back, and you're like, I'd never say that as an adult now. I wouldn't do that. And that's some of the things that I think he was joking about as a kid. So he joked about and wrote about, I mean, not just saying, we're not hearing about witnesses. He wrote about running over children. Yeah, that sounds real hilarious. When you're a teenager, maybe there's some sort of dark, controversial humor, like taboo. Oh, you don't make those type of jokes, so I'm going to make them. But he thought that was appropriate at the time, I guess. He wrote about running over kids. I was so fascinated for a moment that when after I had stopped my vehicle, I sat in a daze, sweet visions filling my head about him running over kids. So wonderful. Real poetic. And this is also the guy that dressed up in a onesie, put on a rubber, what was it, a horse mask, and would play some terrible music. Do I still have that saved? I don't think I do. Yeah, his band was terrible. So his writings became even more disturbing, and the poetry, particularly one piece that was suggestive, very suggestive piece about a cow. I don't want to talk about the parts of the cow and what the parts were doing on the cow as part of this poetry, but still really weird stuff, freaky, kinky, weird stuff, man. As an adult, it's funny he would get into politics knowing that one day this stuff would come up. I mean, how would you not be able to find these things? Or maybe you never thought that this would resurface. You think, oh, there's no cameras, no digital cameras. You talk to your consultants or whatever it is, and you give them the rundown. Here's the things that might come back and bite me, just in case we need to figure out how we can counter these type of attacks. Well, they probably thought, oh, there's no way they'll ever tie that to you. Well, here we are. And they're figuring out your ode to cows and your poetry about running over children and things. It's just weird. Said, whenever my intention was as a teenager, doesn't matter. I have to look long and hard at my actions, at the language I have used, and I have constantly tried better to do, he added. Okay. Now, again, I don't think it disqualifies him for saying some dark things when he was younger. I don't think that, because you can understand that most teens have some sort of loss of filter, don't quite know where they stand. I don't know, when you're 26 and still doing it, it's a different story. Hey, you know, there was a story from Reuters. They put this story out about him. Let me find this. Yeah, a reporter by the name of Joseph Men revealed that the Democratic presidential candidate, Beto O'Rourke, belonged to one of the best-known computer hacker groups as a teenager when he made all these jokes and did different things. I want you to listen to this interview they did with the guy from Reuters, because it's questionable why he decided to sit on this story until after elections occurred when he was running for Senate against Ted Cruz.
I decided to write a book about the Cult of the Dead Cow because they were the most interesting and influential hacking group in history. They illustrated a lot of the things that I think are fascinating about hacking and security work. While I was looking into the Cult of the Dead Cow, I found out that they had a member who was sitting in Congress. I didn't know which one, but I knew that they had a member of Congress. And then I figured out which one it was. And the members of the group wouldn't talk to me about who it was.
Okay, you figured out who it was. Okay. You were a reporter. Okay. You know it was someone sitting in Congress. Okay. You then started asking around to confirm so you could report on this, right? Well, not exactly.
They wouldn't confirm that it was that this person unless I promised that I wouldn't write about it until after the November election.
Ooh, okay. So the stipulation is, hey, you're a reporter. we're going to dictate the terms on which you can report on the news. And this respected reporter said, absolutely not. You can, that's not how it works. The news is the news. I have integrity. I am going to report this. And I'm going to use that as a confirmation. We'll say unconfirmed, but we know that it was Beto O'Rourke. I have found this. Here's my evidence. And this is going to be a breakthrough story because I have integrity. There is no way you can stop me from reporting that. Is that right, Reuters reporter Joseph Men?
That's because the member of Congress had decided to run for Senate.
Oh, yeah. So even more important, you have a person in an active election running for a Senate seat, which is incredibly important. That means your integrity would never, not even a little tiny bit, be compromised.
Beto O'Rourke is who it was. They said, we'll talk to you about Beto O'Rourke, but it's got to be after the November election that it runs. I said, okay.
Oh, you said okay. So you had the evidence. You had people confirming it, but they didn't want to. You to confirm it until after the election, after he ran for Senate against Ted Cruz. And then once that election was over, then you can report it. So you allowed these people to dictate the way that you reported the news. I wonder how your editor feels about that. So he was working on this case for a long time. He's writing this book, doing these things. It shows, it just goes to show you no integrity from reporter Joseph Men. The reason I say that is because he's not a reporter at that time. You know, he's becoming friends, and he's going to help when it he's going to allow them to dictate and write the news for him. So is that a telltale sign of a good reporter? I mean, there's some things that you can say are embargoed because it's like a news release and they want to wait until the press conference comes out and things like that. It's a whole different deal when you have evidence of, you know, probably crimes committed by this person. You have evidence of some pretty dark things that he said. You have some pretty damaging things. But instead of reporting it when you find out about it, you don't want that to hurt the person's reputation because, you know, you like the guy, you're biased towards him, whatever it may be. You have your own editorial bias that might be going on here. So we'll wait until after the election and just see what happens. That is not the sign of a good reporter. Joseph Men, and it's so funny, he's talking about this so casually. Way to go, man. And this is for Reuters, who's reporting this. I wonder if any other organization would have done the same thing. You think the Washington Post would have handled it the same way, or the New York Times or something like that? Well, I guess you can look at Judge Kavanaugh and realize that it doesn't matter if you'd have even unsubstantiated claims or any claims that are even remotely damaging to someone that you don't like, they'll run with it. But if it's something that perhaps is a person you like, you'll hold it. So they'll probably handle it the same way, too. Yikes. Beto O'Rourke, huh? Man, they're just drooling at him right now, aren't they? It's Overnight America, KMOX. Oh, Overnight America, here we are yet again. What do we got here? That's one of those weird nights. I got a couple other things I can talk about here. See, the Neil deGrasse Tyson is going to return to TV. I want to talk about that in the next hour. And don't forget, too, you can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Recker. You can download the podcast, KMOX.com/overnight. A couple of other science-y types of stories to cover. Scott Ballen, the misunderstood health risks of smokeless tobacco products. You know, he's out there saying, you know, at least they're not smoking. But he's got some statistics to talk about. We'll do that in the next hour, too. Did you catch Kevin Kleen's whole nother story? Oh, Kevin did another great one. If you're a fan of broadcasters here in the St. Louis region.
It's really different now. Do you watch the 10 o'clock news?
No, I'm in bed by then.
Channel 5, KSDK.
Before he retired and went to bed before 10, Dick Ford was the anchorman for years at Channel 5.
Deloge, Missouri tonight gave the go-ahead for a horse slaughtering plant to begin operation.
Very successful. Karen and I had 50 shares at 10 o'clock, which I don't think will ever happen again in broadcast history. I mean,
you guys were like royalty.
Well, there's too much competition now. You get all these other...
Did people stop you in the grocery store and when you're trying to buy beer and they'd say, what about the Middle East crisis? They thought you were all news all the time?
No, they never asked me about that. They would ask me if I tint my hair.
Ford still has a full head of thick hair and he looks fit, but he admits retirement was hard at first.
The first couple of years it was. People say, do you miss it? There were a couple of years there when they had some big stories. I miss the big stories. I don't miss the little, trying to make little stories sound big. I don't like that. I mean, but there were occasions when, remember when the little boy was found who had been kidnapped and they found him in Kirkwood? And I said, God, I wish I'd been the anchor on that story. What a great story. But on the ordinary day, no. There were many times, I'll be honest with you, I would like to have gone on the air and said, there ain't much going on today, folks, but here it is, you know. Or we're going to have an interlude of music by Stan Kahn at the organ, you know.
What's the biggest difference you see? Channel 5, Channel 4, Channel 2, all of them. How's local news different?
Well, like I said, I don't want to bite the hand that's fed me so well for so many years.
Let's nibble just a little, though.
I was in for 48 years, but...
Good evening, I'm Dick Ford. As many as 2,000 people heard the pros and cons tonight of a proposed extension of Page Avenue.
I was expecting Ford to say local TV stations have slashed their budgets. They don't have the staff, and they don't have as many substantial, meaty stories as before. But always the gentleman, Ford refrained from saying anything negative. With a whole other story, I'm Kevin Kildene.
Oh, that's cool. I think you all kind of have your favorites of different reporters over time. Kevin Kline's still my favorite. Aw. Does anyone still have a Blockbuster card in their wallet? I wish I had mine. Technically, I don't think I was ever a member of Blockbuster, but my parents were. We didn't go there often. Blockbuster was kind of, we always went to like the second-hand style. The places we went to were not name brand chains when it came to renting videos when I was growing up. Like my parents were saying, Blockbuster, ugh, too expensive. And they charge you if you don't rewind your tapes. I'm going somewhere else. There's always the local alternative. And I forgot what it was called. It was like Video Max 5 or whatever. It was just one of those local places that I'm sure was only in my home city. But there is only one Blockbuster left in the United States. Did you know there was even one remaining? They are making a mint just selling their membership cards. People want to go get membership cards. I understand why. If I had the ability to get myself a Blockbuster membership card at an actual functioning Blockbuster, I would. But it's the last one is in Bend, Oregon. I'm not going to be making any, not even a little bit, but any road trip out there. The last two stores, they were kind of going back and forth, like, who's going to be the last one? In Alaska, they were the ones that dropped out just recently. And the reason why Alaska was popular with Blockbusters was because there wasn't fast Wi-Fi in Alaska. And they're not necessarily known for streaming up there, because when you have slow Wi-Fi, it makes the experience, and it cheapens the experience. So a lot of places that couldn't get Wi-Fi or even fast internet or respectable internet, whatever it may be, they would go out and rent a movie. So they would go out, get the movie, bring it back, do their thing. Well, as the times caught up in Alaska and the internet started getting faster, the need for Blockbuster started disappearing. Anchorage Daily News reported that 13 Blockbuster stores were still open there in 2013. And then as far away from the 9,000 or whatever that were operating up until, you know, the demise. You know, Blockbuster had an opportunity to purchase Netflix. They said, no thanks. Yikes, that's a missed opportunity for something like that. It's funny, of course it's Oregon where they have all the hipsters and people that want to go out there and just be super cool. Oh, I'm going to grow a mustache and drink microbrew and go to my Blockbuster. They all love those throwback stuff to the 90s. Go watch some TGIF and make Urkel jokes. And then the Blockbuster with my pump shoes and my slap wrist things, you know, those little wrist slap things, whatever. I still want a card. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.